urban density, huge issue recently in Auckland, and has been well canvassed recently, with the city's population set to grow by 1 million in the next 25 years. But does an increasingly urbanised world mean higher density will be the future for many cities? What does it mean for the character of a city? Does it mean, as Bill English said in 2014, that Auckland might have to get a bit ugly to cater for the demand for new homes? And what is wrong with a little urban sprawl if you provide the amenities? With me is Deputy Mayor Penny Hulse, Auckland reporter Todd Nile for RNZ, and Bill Mackay, Senior Lecturer, School of Architecture and Planning at Auckland University. Good morning to you all.
Good morning. Morning.
Well, Bill, you first. What is urban density? What does it look like?
Density is more dwelling units in the city, but it's also more diversity as well, which is, I think, something everyone forgets. So we're not talking about the city suddenly getting a whole lot of six-storey buildings over the entire isthmus. We're talking about variety. So we've got some big apartment buildings next to train stations. We've got some lower housing along arterial bus routes. And then we've got what we've already got, suburban houses with backyards where families can and kids can still kick balls around. So we keep that diversity.
So, Penny, for that to happen, is Bill English right? Will Auckland have to get a bit ugly?
You know, there's been so much spoken over the last few months. It's got very political and it's got very stressful talking about urban density. This is not about making Auckland ugly. This is about making a vibrant city with, exactly as Bill says, housing choices. And some of this is living in closer quarters, in apartments, in terraced houses, and in a city that is actually going to be more vibrant. So I don't buy the ugly argument.
What do you reckon, Todd? I mean, there's been some very vocal groups, as Penny said, for and against, very, very vocal issue. But do we know where public opinion sits on this?
I guess it depends which part of Auckland you're in, and the thing that's been interesting is watching the sort of the heated debate in the last couple of months is it's more in certain parts of Auckland, and I don't know whether I'm trying to sort of draw too many conclusions here, but the parts of Auckland where it is a big issue are those pre-Auckland Council, pre-amalgamation areas, where there was really no warm-up, no discussion at all about intensification. Auckland City Council and North Shore City ploughed on with their planning as though the world wasn't going to change, you know, in simple terms. Whereas, particularly in Waitakere and to a lesser extent in Manukau, there was a move towards more in higher density housing. And I guess this debate has arrived like a runaway freight train, perhaps, to those parts of town, Auckland City and North Shore City, that have come into it stone cold and haven't had time to, or haven't had enough time, perhaps, to grasp what it means.
You can understand the fear, can't you, Bill? You can understand the fact that if I, as myself, as a homeowner, if I suddenly get noticed that there's going to be, where there was one villa or one house, now there's going to be 16 bedrooms next to me, that's a real worry.
Yes, and you mentioned the Home of the Year, also in that same issue of Home magazine, is a terrific example by Gerald Parsons and Architects.
So this is the 2016 multi-unit residential. It's a beautiful Wellington apartment development by Parsons and Architects.
Yeah, and if I was living next door and I heard that there were going to be 16 dwelling units on the site that previously had one, I'd be a bit terrified as well, because we don't have enough good examples of how it's done properly in New Zealand in our cities.
I think we've got some beautiful examples, but we just don't tell people about them. And I'm happy to fall on my sword and say, over the last couple of years, we haven't had the right discussion. You know, council's been, we've been a little bit inky-swat. We've expected people to understand what we're talking about, and we haven't actually shown them those beautiful examples that exist.
But do they exist?
They do. And we need, and now I've been jumping up and down over the last couple of weeks saying, for God's sake, let's get stuff on our council website. Let's talk to the university. let's talk to our architects and urban designers, get those examples visible. The work that Mark Todd's doing, Ockham Properties, building the classic apartments
some
of
great,
the future. There's
some great
beautiful stuff
here.
Happening. We need to tell people. We need an urban tour of Auckland looking at great architecture.
What about the cost of those? I'm looking at this beautiful 16-bedroom apartment block, which is on one the site where one villa was on. So that's what we're talking. That's what intensity is, isn't it, Bill? Problem with that is that I'm looking at that and I'm seeing some really high cost materials going to that. The cost.
Yeah, but the fundamental is land cost, and you divide the land cost by the number of dwellings and you get the cost of the dwelling down, and you can still afford decent design and good
you
materials
can?
In there. Yes. Because it's simple maths. By taking the value of the land, the more units you put on there, the more affordable the houses will be.
Can we get an example, Todd, where a city like Auckland moved to increase urban density and works well? Is there any other place we can look at?
Oh, well, I mean, Bill might know this one better than I. There certainly will be overseas, but I think the difficulty that Auckland is facing is that it's, you know, the first city in New Zealand that has reached that scale that is now having to have these debates and discussions, and it's quite difficult for people, you know, in large parts of Auckland to surrender that idea that we're all going to continue living on, you know, single houses on large sections the way, you know, my generation grew up. So we don't have anywhere handy around the country that we can look at and go, oh, yeah, that's okay, we can do that. You know, you have to look overseas, and then, you know, a lot of people get sceptical when you start saying, oh, well, you know, country X and country Y did it.
So, yeah, Penny.
I was just going to say, you know, this is time for a little bit of bravery, and we can research, we can look overseas to our heart's content and as much as we like. It's proven that the best cities in the world are cities that are compact, they're vibrant, and they actually do well financially. Look at Copenhagen. You know, they only spend 4% of their GDP on transport costs. A place like Houston spends 15% of their GDP on transport costs. Think what you can do with that extra money to build beautiful public spaces, to, you know, to zhuzh up your green spaces, and to make good quality. The bottom line is a compact city and a city that is more dense and more vibrant is a city that people want to live in.
And does that mean, does a higher intensity mean a loss of character of certain areas? I mean, I can recall, that's one thing I also worried about as well, and I can recall, you know, back in the mid-2000s, you know, one of Auckland's grand old homes, Coolangatta, remember, you were 90 years old, demolished to make way for apartments. Just shocking. I couldn't believe that happened. I mean, is that the sort of stuff we're going to get?
Well, those are the rules we've got now. And what's been left out of the debate and the horror of the unitary plan is we've got much tougher rules to protect heritage. And I'm sure Bill would know about that.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So that wouldn't happen now?
We have to stop it happening because one of the problems as well is in parallel with the whole debate about numbers and that sort of thing, and the discussion has been very much about numbers as if they were magic numbers and not enough about good examples. But at the same time, we've seen some nice heritage buildings in everyone's street, you know, that villa be knocked over and that sort of thing. So we really need to be kind of more careful. The council needs to be more careful about looking after those little heritage precincts, and not just the big, you know, the big lovely cooling gutters, but the little row of state houses, say.
It's the stuff that fills you with joy in your suburb. And what we're trying to do is to say, within the unitary plan, let's toughen up on those rules. Let's protect that character of areas. But that doesn't mean keeping every last stick standing.
Let's talk about that plan. The independent panel considering Auckland's future, that is to come up with the unitary plan finalised in September, and this is going to be the rule book, the major, major big Bible for the development of Auckland's landscape. So it's hugely important. The panel, as I mentioned, independent, set up by the government. Penny, what's the process?
Gosh, process in a nutshell. We started 5 years ago. We've had hundreds of workshops, for what feels like thousands of meetings to bring together the draft plan. It's kind of, someone described it a few weeks ago, despite the criticisms, as being heroically democratic. So, you know, Auckland's had a pretty good say. It's now with the independent hearings panel. They hear from all the submitters. They then deliver up their recommendations. Council has 20 working days to work those through, and then we make the final decision on which recommendations we accept or reject. The ones we accept become the plan immediately. The ones we reject or disagree on are then subject to appeal.
And this panel, this independent panel, Todd, do you know, I mean, are they giving any hints of where their thinking is at urban density?
I mean, it's a bit hard to read, but from time to time they put out things called interim guidance and they commission reports. And, you know, from a purely unscientific observer's point of view, you kind of get the feeling that they may be more bullish on density and on the flexibility of what might happen on the urban fringe than perhaps the starting point that the council came from, and that a lot of, you know, people who are concerned about the level of intensification are. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise to me if the plan that they brought back to the council was perhaps more than the council had formally in its 2013 version of the plan submitted as its pitch.
Well, the Auckland Bill?
There's just one thing I'd like to say about the whole plan as well. The plan doesn't get all built immediately. What plans do is they turn the tap on. So we're turning the tap on for more density in here, just in the same way that you'd fill your bath at home. And then in 10 years or so, you go and check, and you can turn the tap down a bit then. That's how plans work.
That's such a good
so overnight, we're not going to be having 16 rooms in place of one house next to us, or a glass, a mirrored glass medical centre.
And that's the kind of frightening stuff that's been put out there. And we do need to get a bit of a grip, really. This is a 30-year process. What it means is finally we've planned the whole of the Auckland region, rather than allowing that kind of random mushrooming of bad design all over Auckland. This puts it into context. It means that we're building a city that gives people housing choices. We have to deal with their housing affordability. What we're doing now makes us one of the most expensive cities to live in the world, and that's not okay. And the bottom line is we need a city that's going to work for all of our communities for the next 30 years. And this isn't about an apartment next to you immediately.
So that you mentioned the communication could be better. I mean, the Auckland Council voted down proposals for higher urban density that was proposed by council staff to take to the independent panel. Just, I mean, why did that happen?
It was one of those days where I think people lost their political vision, they lost their bottle, and they were frightened of a bunch of angry people who came and shouted. I certainly didn't vote that way, and I've been an unapologetic champion for density. But the
was it a bit of a procedural shambles?
It was one of those things that was a train smash of a day. And I think it was one of those terrible political things that was sort of waiting to happen. People didn't take the chance to have a considered view on what they were actually doing as councillors, and it was a moment where democracy appeared to win, but actually the wider democracy of Auckland lost.
I think days like that highlight some of the downsides of the pace of this process. I mean, it's been, by the time the plan comes back, it's going to be less than 6 years from woe to go, you know, less than 6 years from the start of this debate. And the first couple of years was about the Auckland plan, which was sort of the vision stuff, the social view of the future and economics and so on. So there's only really been 3 years where people have started to go, hang on, that's the neighbourhood I live in, that's what that might look like. And it's a timetable that was set by the government. And when you think about it, it's a very short period of time for people to get their head around potential change of that scale in their neighbourhood and across the city.
What do you reckon, Bill? I mean, the vast majority of residents in affected zones didn't submit on the unitary plan because they thought the zone protected their interests. Then they were, in effect, locked out of participating in the process. I had a friend who lives in Remuera. He's got a house in. He goes, I wasn't part of the process. I feel my voice was never heard.
Well, at that same hearing, there were a lot of angry homeowners there, but there were a lot of young people who don't yet own homes, and they were supporting density because it's the only way that we can get a house for them to live in. And they're many of the younger generation, they're not car drivers. I've got three sons who are all 19 and above. Only one is learning to drive now. They want to live in a more compact city near where things are happening. They don't want to be suburban commuters. Like
all right, let me ask you then, is this, I mean, housing affordability then, as you've just initiated, major, major issue. I know two people, 30, who have decided not to buy a house. They're going to try and research how to put their money elsewhere because it's gone for them. So 50% of Aucklanders rent. Younger voices in Auckland argue that without the density, affordability won't happen. So let me ask you, Penny, is this a battle of the generations?
We could look at it in that way. I'd rather think of it as a bit of a battle of ideology, and one that I'm hoping people will just take a breath and think about. The angry homeowner that you talk about in Remuera, they've been frightened into believing that their suburb will be changed for the worse. Look at a beautiful place like Freemans Bay, Ponsonby, some of those areas, the densest suburbs almost in New Zealand. They're beautiful because they're done well. No one's going to destroy Remuera overnight, but those people have probably also got children who they want to stay living in Auckland and grandchildren who they want to stay. I don't want my grandchildren to move to Invercargill. I want them to stay here. So part of it is step changing the discussion, and let's talk about that Auckland that our kids can live in and afford to live in.
Well, also it's about your needs change as you grow. So it brings us back to diversity. So those young people, we've got to be able to put them into affordable apartments, but those apartments have got to be good quality so that they maintain their property value, the price doesn't drop, and then when they start to have kids, they'll want to move to the suburbs.
And I think that's really, from what I'm trying to sort of decipher now, that is an absolute fundamentalism, the good quality. Off there, you just gave me a couple of examples of what it means between bad quality and good quality. You said something really fascinating about, for example, tacked on balconies.
Yeah. So
tell us.
When you're looking for your apartment or your terraced house, you want a balcony that goes back into the building. You don't want a balcony that just hangs off the outside. You've got no privacy, you've got no shelter, your plastic chair will blow away overnight. Another good example is lobbies. The Ockham apartment buildings that have been built at the moment, they break the tenancies into little groups of 8 or 10, each with their own lobby. Those people become your neighbours, whereas if you've got 100 people in one building and one lobby, it's like a hotel. It's anonymous.
And that's exactly why...
Are you listening to this? Is Auckland Council listening to this?
We are, and that's why we've got the Urban Design Guideline process. So it's the beautiful minds like Bill's that are guiding the way that we're expecting our density to develop. So any more than two dwellings on a site, you're required to meet a whole bunch of good urban design guidelines. Anything of greater scale, it's people like Bill who are going to run their eye over this and give it the yay or nay, not a bunch of people like me who are not experts and who, you know, we hear far too much from.
This discussion about how to do things well and nicely and properly, to some extent, is colliding against that other political agenda, which is Auckland's runaway housing market and a government that wants to do everything and anything that it can to try and put the brakes on rising house prices. And there's a strong view in the government at the moment that supply will answer that problem, and so let's have as much density as we can, let's have as much spread as we can, and let's just get something built no matter what it is. So there's almost two conflicting agendas.
Can you see why people are pessimistic? Because the place we're recording from right now, or doing this live interview, around us are about five or six shocking.
We use them as the examples of what not to do.
Well, one's going up right now. The one's still being built. You know, and can you understand that people are pessimistic?
These are so-called shoebox apartment buildings.
Oh, they're terrible.
Awful.
Under the old Auckland Council plan. We need to remember that. That's why we need a new one.
And that's why there are good design guidelines now, and urban design panels have really developed and come into their own over the past 10 years. So there are those quality controls now. Yes, there is pressure from government. In design, everyone always wants it fast, good and cheap, but you only ever get two of those things. And the government wants it fast and cheap. That means it's not going to be good. If we don't build it good, we are building problems for ourselves further down the road.
And yet with the shoebox, I mean, I, having lived or worked in the middle of this stuff for years and was horrified at the start, when you look at it now, you would say, if they weren't there like that, what would happen to all those people who, for whom that's the only place they can afford to live in the inner city?
Well, that's another issue, maybe another panel, but it's been very, very interesting hearing all your thoughts. Penny Holtz, Bill Mackay and Todd Nile.